Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Putin.
Welcome to Consider This. We are delighted to introduce our guest tonight, Dato' Dennis Ignatius, who is a 36-year veteran of the Malaysian Foreign Service. He was Malaysia's ambassador to Chile and later to Argentina with concurrent accreditation to Colombia, Ecuador, Peru, Paraguay, and Uruguay. He was the High Commissioner for Malaysia to Canada from 2001 and served in that position until his retirement in 2008. He is the author of Diplomatically Speaking, which is also the title of his fortnightly column on politics and foreign affairs in the Star. And his most recently published book is titled Paradise Lost, Mahathir and the End of Hope. Dennis, welcome to the show. It's good of you to join us.
Thank you. Very nice of you to invite me.
Okay, so let's talk about this this new book, Paradise Lost. And I just wanted to perhaps begin our conversation, you know, rather than I explain what the book is about, maybe you can, in your own words, tell us what this book is, what it represents, and what it is about.
All right. Let me try to capture this as briefly as I can. You know, as you mentioned, I spent most of my career in the Foreign Service. And after I retired, I came home, of course, and I realized I came home to a country I barely recognized. So much seemed to have gone wrong. You know, we had become a kleptocracy. The roots of institutional racism and religious extremism had sunk deep. There was institutional decay. And like many other Malaysians, I saw an opportunity for change in GE14. And of course, like many other Malaysians, I joined Bursay. We demonstrated, we shouted, we screamed, we turned out en masse to vote. And I, as a columnist, wrote many articles in support of Pakatan Harapan. And I can tell you, when the results were announced, I really thought we'd see the beginning of a new dawn for Malaysia, an end to corruption, steps to improve governance, begin to rebuild bridges between the races, abolishing anti-democratic legislation. These were things that we carried in our hearts, and most Malaysians carried in our hearts for a long time. And then, of course, the Pakatan Harapan government fell, and it caused a lot of dismay and anguish. And I wanted to chronicle what happened, what went wrong, where we are headed. And so I talked about, in the book, I talk about Mahathir's role in both in the victory of Pakatan Harapan and its subsequent fall. I talk about some of the policies that he started, he instituted years and years ago, and he planted the seeds, and now we are beginning to reap a bitter harvest, if you will, in terms of corruption, in terms of racism, in terms of religious extremism, in terms of all those things that have gone wrong. And so I wanted to chronicle it. I wanted to write it down. And that's when I started to undertake this project.
Dennis, your subtitle, Mahathir and the End of Hope, is a pretty pointed. Did you mean to, and does the book actually single him out as the main factor for the end of the Pakatan Harapan's administration? That was just 22 months, right?
Yes. Well, you know, the title was also a play on words, Pakatan Harapan, hope, and Mahathir's role in which I saw as being instrumental in its collapse. So I did want to single him out because ultimately, I saw his role as being very destructive to the hope, both of the Pakatan Harapan hope and the hope that we all had when Pakatan Harapan was elected.
All right. Well, okay. So I didn't show the book before in the introduction, but I forgot. So I'm showing it now, and I'm just wondering
hold
about
up my copy too. Autograph.
Yes, we should. So can I just ask you about the response to it? Because again, you know, it's a very critical look at Mahathir's role. And as you mentioned earlier, you lay a lot of the blame at his feet for the fall of Pakatan. But not just that, but also his years as Prime Minister, which you argue has left Malaysia a legacy of corruption and racism and religious extremism. We'll delve into that in a bit. I'm just wondering whether, you know, some of the responses to the book, how you would respond to the criticism that you are perhaps not an insider, that you weren't an insider in the Pakatan Harapan administration or that close to Mahathir. How would you respond to that? Because you wrote a really critical book about him without being close to the man.
Well, as I write in my book, I did have an opportunity to observe him. There were many things about him that I liked. I spare no effort in terms of highlighting those aspects. But I write as a columnist, as somebody who has observed developments over all this period of time. And remember, Mahathir has been a larger than life figure for most of us. So there was plenty of opportunity to observe his policies, to study his speeches, his statements, and his policies and actions. So I'm writing from that perspective. I never claimed to be a close friend of his. No, I never said that, never claimed that. But I'm writing as a columnist, as how I see his policies and where it has led us to.
Yeah, Dennis, I mean, though people also might know that, you know, as a diplomat and over a period, as you point out also, a period that, you know, shadows Mahathir's long 22 years in power, you would have had to defend Mahathir's authoritarianism, you know, the 87 crackdown, the crackdown on reformasi, the jailing and the trial of Anwar Ibrahim. Throughout those years, did it not give you pause to about the character of the man who then came to helm the Harapan government, you know, over the last general election?
Of course, there were times when I saw some of the policies and it was very hard to defend them as ambassador. But that was my role. My role was to defend the government, and I explained the policies that the government was undertaking and carried out. I didn't have to believe in them. I just had to explain my government's policies. But you know, when I began to see more and more, especially after I retired and I came home and followed events more closely, I began to see a lot of things that made me deeply unhappy. In fact, in the book, I talk about even some of the things that went on during my time in the Foreign Service that was, I thought, very discouraging, very disheartening.
Right. And can I ask you, just while you were in the Foreign Service, I'm just wondering, I mean, all the things that Sharad said, yes, but you also pointed to the fact that Mahathir was very respected by world leaders. And I'm just wondering whether you can kind of paint that picture of that dichotomy for us, of a man who you had to defend on the world stage, but also was quite respected by some quarters.
Yeah, I write in the book that I was very proud to stand with him on the world stage, and I attended many meetings and visits with him. I organized visits with him, and so I spent a great deal of time. And you know, when you're ambassador, when the prime minister comes to your post, you are with him all the time. You sit in the car. You're the first he sees when he gets up in the morning, and the last he sees at night. So you spend a lot of time with him. And I write in the book that you know, Mahathir took Malaysia's image to a new level, a level that we've not had before, especially in the developing countries. He was widely respected everywhere he went. People respected him. They liked the way he stood up to Western powers. They liked the way he called out the hypocrisy of the Western powers. They liked they loved to come to Kuala Lumpur and see all the amazing things that was accomplished in the city and things like that. But of course, they didn't see the other side of the story, that is the corruption, the racism, and all those other things. They didn't see that. They only saw one side of it. But nevertheless, whenever he went, if you're an ambassador at a post and the country is so excited about your prime minister, that's fantastic.
Dennis, you know, I think all Malaysians, well, maybe not all, but a good number of us have theories about the man just because he dominated life. As you say, you really don't have to be a friend of his or in his inner circle to have a take on Dr. Mahathir. What do you think were the impulses within Mahathir, his personality? He's very thorough, but he can also be deeply authoritarian, dismissive of others. He talks big about the vision for the country, but he's also an extraordinarily divisive element in society or in political society. So, I mean, what do you think drove the man in those 22 months that resulted in you laying this indictment at his feet?
Well, you know, he came to office with a very clear vision, with a very clear purpose. He was driven by this vision that he had of the kind of Malaysia he wanted to see. I served under quite a few prime ministers, and I've had the experience of working with a few presidents and prime ministers from other countries. Mahathir stood head and shoulders, and I said this in my book, he stood head and shoulders above everybody else because he was so focused. He had a very clear vision. He didn't brook any opposition. He didn't brook any nonsense. He wanted it to be done his way and according to his vision. The problem that a lot of us had was that his vision was not necessarily the best vision for Malaysia, because in many ways it marginalized non-Malays, people like me, and it was hard for us to go along with that vision. Of course we wanted him to succeed. Of course we wanted our nation to prosper and grow, but how do you do that when the prime minister, the head of the government, tends to exclude non-Malays, a significant portion of the population, from his vision, from his plans?
Dennis, we're going to take a quick break, but I want to come back because you brought up a lot of points that we need to delve more into. But let's continue this conversation in just a couple of minutes. Stay tuned to Consider This. Welcome back to Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. With me is Sharad Kutan. Let's continue our conversation with former diplomat Dr. Dennis Ignatius, author of the recently published book Paradise Lost, Mahathir and the End of Hope. Dennis, I wanted to talk to you about specifically chapter 13 in this book, The Divine Bureaucracy. I have to say, of all the chapters in the book, that was the one that struck me the most. And reading it, I had to confront some of my own privileges and long-held assumptions. And I liked that you wrote about the Islamic bureaucracy, the political Islam in Malaysia. I'm just wondering, how difficult was that to write, particularly because you went really deep into the bureaucracy of JAKIM, if I were to give a little teaser into the chapter?
It was, of course, a sensitive subject. Lots of people were very cautious about it. But look, I really wanted to look at all the areas that I think we need to be concerned about, we need to look at, we need to discuss. And so maybe it's a question of fools rushing in where wise men seldom tread. But I decided to just follow the evidence, to do the research and follow the evidence. And what I found personally to me was very alarming. I quoted many respected professors from different universities and different political figures. And they're all concerned. They're all concerned. And they are concerned about This mindset, this indoctrination that had been going on for decades, And some of them, I think it was Professor Fauci, who said that there has been a mental revolution, and it's not a good revolution that has taken place. So I hope people read that chapter.
What I found particularly interesting was because you linked it back to Mahathir. You said that Jakim was Mahathir's brainchild, but also his unintended consequence. And I'm curious to know about how, particularly when I was reading the book, I found looking through the lens of a marginalized non-Malay, non-Muslim. And I thought that was particularly interesting. Where do you see the conversations around the religious bureaucracy and how its far-reaching influence in Malaysia?
Look, I start from the premise that Malaysia was never constructed as a religious state. The founding fathers were very clear that we are a secular democracy. I think Tunku Abdul Rahman, Tun Razak Hussein all made that very, very clear. They went out of their way to separate religion from politics. They were very clear about the constitutional and foundational moorings of our nation. I think Mahathir came in, and as I said, and as many scholars have said, he wanted to outmaneuver PAS, and so he declared Malaysia an Islamic state. In fact, he said, we're not just an Islamic state, we're a fundamentalist Islamic state. And I think that opened the door to a whole lot of developments. And then he, of course, energized and empowered Jakim to a degree that I think even he, towards the end of his government service, and especially when he was prime minister the last time, even he was surprised and shocked at how far it had extended. But as a minority, I'm deeply concerned about this. I honestly don't trust a single word that parties like PAS talk. We're talking about RU 33355 now, and PAS says, "Oh, non-Muslims don't have to worry. This applies only to non-Muslims." But if you look at the discussions that are going on within the Muslim community, it's very clear that sooner or later it's going to be applied to everyone. Chief Justice said the same thing.
Right, Dennis. I mean, so we go back to, and I think this is also embedded in your discussion of what happened or has happened over the last 3 years, which is this idea that, there are, in fact, competing narratives about not just where Malaysia came from, but where we should go. And there's always been a contest between a more secular, vision of Malaysia and those that are much more religiously inclined. And today we also have other tendencies, regional identities of Sabah and Sarawak are also very strong and pulled in different ways. So, Dennis, when we think about democratization, when you think about democratization, and I kind of pick up some interesting, reflections that you have, and you kind of hoped that Pakatan worked more like a team. They're much more like a constellation of forces rather than a single-minded, entity. Do you think that we'll have to always work through these contradictions or these tensions between the different narratives and the ways in which we operate?
Look, I think there's a struggle going on for the soul of Malaysia. It's an intense struggle that's going on. Whether Malaysia is going to be secular constitutional democracy, or we are going to slide towards a fully fledged Islamic state. I'm not talking about the kind of Islamic state that exists in the Middle East and things like that. I'm talking about a state that's structured completely and entirely around Islam. So there's this intense battle going on, and it's reflected, I think, it was reflected very clearly in Pakatan Harapan. There were groups within Pakatan Harapan who were not opposed to an Islamic state. There were groups within Pakatan Harapan who were fiercely holding on to our secular mooring. So I think this is a struggle that's going on. It's a struggle that we're going to see played out in the next few years. My hope is that we will hold on to our constitutional, the way we were created, the way our state was constructed as a secular democracy.
Dennis, when I was reading your book, I really felt your sense of maybe anger and a sense of betrayal. And as you mentioned, you talked about some dismay. in writing this book. And I'm just wondering, because the book ends on a discussion about reform and you saying that if, you know, we have leaders who are obdurate and self-serving still at the top of that pyramid, all talk of reform is futile. And I'm just wondering whether is that your current sense at the moment? Are you pessimistic about Malaysia's ability to reform, our ability to pick ourselves up and perhaps change trajectory?
Well, I'm going to be very direct on this. Look, I think there's no hope for change for so long as the current crop of leaders remain at the top of the pyramid. One of the things that have amazed me as I was doing the research for the book is that we're not a banana republic where we don't know what to do, or we are so corrupt and so that we don't know what to do. We are struggling, we're searching for answers. No, we have all the answers that we need. You look at every discipline, if you talk about good governance, if you talk about democracy, if you talk about corruption, you talk about education reform. In all these areas, extensive studies have been done. Great research have been done. We have the answers, but we go nowhere because, as I said, at the top of the pyramid sit this bunch of people who created this system and who want to see it continue because it benefits them. It doesn't benefit the vast majority of Malaysians. It benefits them. And so until that happens, I don't see change happening. I mean, look, Anwar Ibrahim was recently complaining in Parliament that he doesn't see any movement on the MOU. I don't expect any movement on the MOU because they're not going to move these. They're not going to tamper with a system that they have profited from all this while.
Dennis, I mean, so there's always this debate about whether, you know, bad leaders make for bad systems, or in fact, the vast majority of the Malaysian middle class who, through the many years of Mahathir's administration, supported him. He promised development, he said wealth, and they were happy to disregard the violations of human rights, environmental destruction, if you remember the protests against Bakun. I mean, the 80s and the 90s was littered with violations of democracy that the middle class just ignored. Don't you think some of the blame has to be placed on Malaysians for allowing their leaders to be so corrupt, selfish, and indifferent?
Absolutely. No argument for me on that. Look, Malaysians have actually been we're very conservative people. We don't like to challenge our leadership. Perhaps that's part of our feudal mentality, you know. We don't like to challenge. We're very respectful of our leaders and things like that. And maybe that, in a large way, contributed to the rot that set in. But I think that change is taking place. I call it a great awakening that's going on in Malaysia today. Already you can see a rising sense of dissatisfaction with the present system. Social media is full of angry denunciations of all the injustices. I've never seen so many angry comments, and a lot of it coming from the Malay street. People are not keeping quiet anymore. It's a sign that, to me, that the old feudal structures are perhaps breaking down. You mentioned Sabah and Sarawak. The protests and the complaints coming from Sabah and Sarawak are louder today than they've ever been. And you look, there's growing support for independent MPs, GRAK independent, retired soldiers are forming political parties. So there's so much of that going on. And young people, my goodness, I'm amazed at the young people on the move, marching, demanding for justice, demanding for rights, demanding for job security, the white flag movement, the black dress movement, all kinds of things. And I think that they're all signs that the old order is perhaps slowly crumbling. What will happen is going to be fascinating and interesting to see.
Okay, on that note, we've come to the end of the show. Dennis, thank you so much for being with us tonight. Appreciate your time.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
That was a former diplomat, Dennis Ignatius, author of the book Paradise Lost, Mahathir and the End of Hope. That's all we have for you on this episode of Consider This. Before we leave you, a reminder that you can get the latest information on COVID-19 vaccines at astroawani.com as well as the Astro Awani app. I'm Melissa Isis.
And I'm Sharad Kutan, signing off for the evening.
Thank you so much for watching. Good night.
Thank you.